How do we start this? Okay, there it goes, okay. So we're going to totally change direction here, and we're going to get much more applied. And I'm going to be discussing the role of natural iron oxide nanophases in nutrient dynamics and nutrient acquisition by plants. And I'll specifically be talking about three different systems. First, talking about occurrence of nanophase iron oxides. They're present in virtually all soils, and I'll be discussing this to some extent a little bit later. They can vary from trace to substantial. In some systems, we find them as being dominant. One system I'll talk about today is the wetland system, where we actually often find the iron oxide contents being much greater than the nanophase being much contributing more than 50% to the total iron oxide content. And just as an example, these are soils from Bangladesh, and looking at 500 soils, and this would be 100% of the iron oxides would be what we would describe as probably being nanophase, and to 0%. So it ranges quite a lot. Some other ecosystems, you also see very high concentrations of nanophase, and one system where you do see it are in mine seep environments, where iron oxides are precipitating very rapidly, and they can, in some cases, dominate in these systems. General characteristics of the nanophase particles is they're very small, and generally we think of them ranging principally from about 4 to, I'd say, here I have 10, but I would say up to 20 nanometers. They have very high surface areas. The mean surface areas would be around 250 to 350 meters squared per gram. Today I'm going to be talking mostly about ferrihydrite and substituted analogs. There's other nanophases, but I'm going to be restricting my discussions today to these ferrihydrite type phases. They have very adsorptive surfaces, as has already been discussed. Anything that's around that where would have a propensity to bind to oxides like this, they can bind to them. Another property of them is that they're often thermodynamically unstable. And they also have a relative ease of dissolution. Here I've just summarized comparing goethite and ferrihydrite, looking at Langmuir adsorption maxima for ferrihydrite versus goethite. And these are relatively poorly crystalline goethites in this case too, but you get substantially greater adsorption of species like this to ferrihydrite than you would to goethite. And often they're specifically adsorbed. Here I've shown the case of arsenate. In the case of arsenate to ferrihydrite or phosphate to ferrihydrite, they're forming bidentate complexes that once you form them are very difficult to break. Here are just summarizing again some characteristics of these nanophases. The ferrihydrite phases are less thermodynamically stable and more soluble than the more crystalline phases like goethite and hematite. Their solubility in soil is also very dependent on pH. And here I've shown what the physiologists tell us is the iron concentration that's required to sustain plant growth. If we look strictly at the ferric hydrolysis species, the concentrations of dissolved iron are much lower than what the plant might need, so we consider any plant really to be in an iron deficiency, a potential iron deficiency stress environment, that dissolved iron concentrations are probably lower than what they need. I think this, here I'm comparing the thermodynamic plots for ferrihydrite versus goethite in equilibrium with citrate. And you can see that in this case, the ferrihydrite complexes are very stable up to relatively high pH, but in goethite, the concentrations of dissolved iron are much, much lower. And so through thermodynamics and equilibrium concentrations, we would expect much higher concentrations with complexing agents such as this. Reactions like this are very important in soils because plants produce these agents, like citrate and malate, often as a specific adaptation to iron deficiency. But in spite of their thermodynamic instability and ease of dissolution, they persist in soils. They're formed naturally under conditions of rapid precipitation, as will exist in some systems, especially wetland systems, as I'll discuss. Their strongly adsorbed species provide kinetic inhibitions to precipitation and crystal growth. So it's probably because of these kinetic inhibitions, because of adsorbed species, that arrangements of individual particles to larger particles and crystal growth process to more crystalline phases are probably impeded. In spite of their thermodynamic stability, the nanocrystalline iron oxide phases exist in most soils because of these conditions. Generally, there are several techniques we would use to assess reactive iron oxides. For mineralogical identification, usually it involves magnetic separation and differential X-ray diffraction. And for quantitative assessment, because they're very difficult to isolate from soils, often we use extraction techniques to obtain quantitative assessments. Ammonium oxalate will react with all iron oxides and dissolve them, but the kinetics of reaction is very, very different, orders of magnitude different. So we can use ammonium oxalate with short reaction times to obtain quantitative estimates of those iron oxide phases that are more reactive and are likely nanocrystalline phases. Also, another useful tool is to look at relative reactivity. And so we can use complexing agents to compare different environments in terms of relative reactivity by reacting them with chelating agents and just look at the differences in kinetics of dissolution of iron in these phases. This is just showing a typical X-ray diffraction pattern. These minerals have short-range order, but they have very poor long-range order. In fact, the crystals are probably relatively small, and the crystal domains are quite small. So you get very broad X-ray diffraction peaks. Today I'm going to talk about three examples. I'm first going to talk about acquisition of iron by grasses and calcareous systems. I'm going to talk about acquisition of iron, of nutrients, specifically iron and zinc by rice, and phosphate also by rice. And then I'm going to talk a little bit about acquisition of phosphate in soils also is impacted by nanophases. The nanocrystalline oxides probably play a very important role in iron acquisition by grasses. Grass roots exude a class of compounds that we know as phytosiderophores, the muganaic acids, that are non-protonaceous amino acids, and these compounds react very readily with these with ferrihydrite. It's almost like these compounds are made for a purpose. The plants have produced them for a purpose. Even though the formation constants with iron in the case of this complex is not that high, the kinetic of dissolution is very rapid. And here I've just given a graph just showing, in this case, this is taking phytosiderophores that are produced by barley and comparing the rate of dissolution with ferrihydrite compared to goethite. In many cases, we see we use ammonium oxalate extraction. And this is a study in which we looked at 24 calcareous soils, and iron deficiency results in chlorosis of the plant tissue. It's a yellowing of the plant tissue due to reduction in chlorophyll production. So we can compare plants for their iron acquisition by looking at this interveinal chlorosis. In these 24 soils, there was a very strong correlation between here again, a high rating would be a large amount of chlorosis, a rating of zero would be a perfectly healthy plant. And we see at high ammonium oxalate extractable iron contents, where plants contain a more reactive iron oxide phase, the chlorosis was considerably less. So these materials are playing a very active role in terms of acquisition by plants under iron deficiency stress environments. This is the same graph that I showed you earlier. These are soils from Bangladesh. And again, this is this is in a paddy soil. These are all rice paddy soils. And this whole study included about 500 soils from five areas of Bangladesh. And this is plotting the proportion of iron oxides that are ammonium oxalate extractable. This is a short term ammonium oxalate extraction. And in terms of the ratio to the total iron oxide content varied from very low proportions to very high proportions, but it's very common in these soils to see what we would project would probably be nanophases represent a very significant proportion of the total iron oxide content in these soils. In continuing the discussion of wetland soils, to survive, wetland plants have to get oxygen to the roots, and plants have evolved mechanisms with the parenchyma structures that enables them to transport oxygen to the root tips. Through radial oxygen loss, the oxygen will pass through the endodermal and epidermal layers, and so even though the plant may be existing in a very reduced environment, the environment right at this root surface can be very oxidizing. And consequently, you produce a iron oxide plaque at the surface of really any wetland plant. And in looking at these oxides, they're predominantly nanocrystalline. In most of these, if we have a live functioning root, we find that these oxides are very reactive, quite reactive, and it's not unusual to see 75 to 100% of the total iron oxide being what we would project as being nanocrystalline phases. And another thing I might add here is plants, we feel, play a very active role in this process. When we do studies in hydroponics, we see evidence of iron precipitation occurring at the root within seconds. This is a very rapid process. So we feel that the plant may actually be catalyzing this initial formation. And once you begin forming a plaque, the iron on the plaque can serve as an oxygen donor too. So the reaction becomes much more rapid. These plaques have small particles. The particles are quite small particle size, in the range of 4 to 20 nanometers. Again, they have a very high adsorption capacity for phosphate, zinc, arsenic species, cadmium. But they can also be dissolved by the plant root, too. So rice also produces phytosiderophores and other organic acids. And these organic acids can function to dissolve the plaque. Here's just a cartoon showing a rice root. The rice plant has really almost created the perfect system because it's created a system where it puts nutrients right where it needs it as a result of plant process. And these is a site for absorption of nutrients the plant needs, but also things that the plant doesn't need, like arsenic. So it affects acquisition of both nutrient and toxic elements by plants. This is just comparing the iron and zinc concentrations of the soil versus a root. And this is the iron concentration of the root. It's not unusual to see greater than 5% of the total root mass being iron due to precipitation of plaque. And again, this is comparing the bulk soil iron concentration with the root concentration, which is predominantly due to plaque, and the root concentration is always higher. Just briefly go through plant adaptations to peat efficiency stress. Probably most plants will produce organic acids as a specific and non-specific adaptation to iron deficiency, and these are some of the organic acids that they can produce. There's other mechanisms, but I'm going to restrict the discussion to the exudation of organic acids. And these organic acids that are released, there's two processes that can occur. One process is a process of ligand exchange, where a ligand would compete with phosphate. But because phosphate is bound by a bidentate mechanism, this is probably not very active. Probably the biggest role of the plant is going to be in, of the ligand, is going to be in dissolution of these nanophases. And the result is that that iron is released and complexed by the ligand and potentially available to the plant. And with this reaction, the phosphate is also released and potentially available to the plant. So in conclusion, I'll leave you with three messages. Nanocrystalline iron oxides are an important, perhaps essential, component of plant and microbial nutrient acquisition processes. Nanocrystalline iron oxides are important factors in the sustainability of agricultural and natural systems. And then a third message here that I haven't discussed, but because nanocrystalline oxides are thermodynamically unstable, and the extent of their presence is, the extent of their presence is strongly impacted by agriculture and ecosystem management, so we can change concentrations of these nanocrystalline oxides that are beneficial just through management.